Welcome to the Tuesday, November 11th, Carver Board of Aldermen work session. It is Veterans Day, or Remembrance Day, as it used to be called, Armistice Day before that, the day 79 years ago, I think, that the 80 years ago, that the 90 years ago, 80, 90 years ago, a bunch of years ago, the First World War ended. So I would like to ask that we begin our meeting with a moment of silence to remember our veterans.
Mr. Mayor, can I also request that 2 years ago we celebrated today, 2 years ago, Misael Martinez died fighting for this country, one of our neighbors, and I'd like to remember him at this point.
Thank you. Thank you all. And I guess the other thing before we begin our printed agenda is just to say that I know that everybody on the Board of Aldermen, and I think the great majority of us in the town of Carrboro, are so proud of our country for the events of last week. And it put me, the election last week put me in mind of something that Dr. King said a long time ago, and I'd just like to read a brief quote from him. He said, "When our days become dreary with low hovering clouds of despair, and when our nights become darker than a thousand midnights, let us remember that there is a creative force in this universe working to pull down the gigantic mountains of evil, a power that is able to make a way out of no way and transform dark yesterdays into bright tomorrows. Let us realize the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice."
That's great. Thanks, Mark.
Could I?
Because continue this along is the arc of the moral universe.
Yes, continuing along the arc of the moral universe going towards justice. Normally I'd save this for the end of a meeting, but since it's a work session instead of a regular meeting, I'll bring it up now. I think many people were delighted with the election nationally, but there were some very disappointing outcomes as well, and those have to do with civil rights and human rights and the right of all people to enjoy or suffer through marriage. And that right was again denied in several states. And I would like this board to pass a resolution to go to our congressional delegation, including our newly elected senator, asking them to make a priority of their service to work for and advocate for the right to marry for all people. Mm-hmm. So if we could,
is that the resolution?
Yes.
I think that was a motion for a resolution, right?
Yes.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. If anybody would like to add any comments, if not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed.
And since the Carver Board of Aldermen has voted on this, I'm sure that tomorrow morning, everybody will have the right to marry.
Now we just have to overturn California.
Well,
thank
well,
you.
Utah
nice.
Did it.
The art
one
of the
way
world.
We'll do it. Carver will do it the other.
All right. Well, with that, Mr. Manager, our consent agenda.
Okay. Item one is approval of minutes of previous meetings of October 21st and 28, 2008. Item two is a request to set a public hearing for the Colleton Crossing Architecturally Integrated Subdivision.
I'd like to talk about the no without from Charlie Buckner.
Okay. Is there a motion for the approval of the minutes?
So moved. Second.
The minutes have been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Dan?
Yeah, I guess I hadn't really thought about this, but I think, you know, Charlie's right that, you know, this is, you know, the people in those neighborhoods surrounding that project have a lot of interest in this, and it may not be a good night for, you know, there may be a lot of people, some people out of town who would want to be here. On the other hand, if we don't do it, then, you know, it would mean postponing it till January. So I just thought, you know, we should kind of
consider that. Mr. Manager.
Just a couple things. One is staff actually talked with the applicant about this very issue mm-hmm. some time ago. The application is complete, and the applicant did want to move forward with it from November. I think the applicant is here if the board wishes to hear from him. And Mike might want to weigh in about not setting the hearing. The board has routinely on items like this not necessarily taken action the night of the public hearing. So that would be an option for the board as well. But in any event, just wanted to point out that we had talked with the applicant about the issue of Thanksgiving week.
Mark.
Yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was at the joint review that we had last Thursday for this, and I mean there were at least 2 hours of comments from representatives from both neighborhoods there that evening, and I know we have another notice from the EAB talking about all the issues that they want to discuss, and they're asking us to postpone it as well, and the planning board didn't even get to it that night. I know they're anticipating a kind of a long evening, their next meeting to discuss all the issues, so just want to throw that into the mix. I'm not sure that having the meeting, I understand the applicant's position, but having the meeting, you know, during Thanksgiving week does seem to be, you know, not the best of timing.
Well, there's also concern from the EAB as to whether or not they will really be able to have enough time between now and the 25th to go through it the way they had wanted, and that was in our packet.
Right. I guess what Steve's suggesting is perhaps, or the implication is that we could have the public hearing open the public hearing on the 25th and have right. the presentation and continue it till mm-hmm. the January meeting, at which time we'd have more comment from advisory boards, citizens potentially, and might act on it in January.
So we'd at least get started.
Yeah,
and, you know, if that would suit, you know, the expectations of the applicant and sort of our tradition better.
Because it would be continued regardless, because that's
we would not vote on this application.
It would be continued
on the 25th,
with the ability for people to speak
public
again in January for the first time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That would be. I'm comfortable with that.
Because the presentation to us usually takes, with a large project, a fair amount of time and questioning. So, yeah. Would that work, Mr. Manager?
It certainly would work for me. I don't know if you want to hear from the applicant or if it's here,
well,
but I think that's always you all's prerogative.
The applicant would not get a decision that night regardless. We don't vote on projects of this size.
So, well, I guess what we could ask the applicant, though, is given that it's going to go into January anyway, if he'd rather wait and do the presentation, the full public hearing at that time, or get it started this month. So I guess that's
Come
the question.
On. To the podium, if you would.
Good evening. My name is Tim Smith with Philip Post and Associates. I'm speaking on behalf of the applicant who's here tonight, Jim Melville, and his wife. We would like to do, as you just mentioned, to open the public hearing. We understand fully that, you know, an action will not be taken. We are working with the neighbors still. We're going to have another neighborhood meeting to discuss their concerns further, but we would like to get the hearing open to get the discussions going and get it presented before you all so that we can make that much more progress as we head towards January. So that makes total sense to us, and we're completely acceptable of that. You know, if we can move in that direction.
Okay. Is there a motion for the resolution? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. So we will begin those hearings on November 25th.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We'll be accepting, of course, written comments or questions from the public if there are people who cannot make that particular meeting, but the decision probably will not come until sometime in January at the earliest anyway. Okay. Mr. Manager, item B1, a presentation.
This is the presentation of the capital improvements plan. The purpose of this item is to provide the board with an opportunity to review and adopt the 2009-2010 capital improvement plans with any pertinent suggestions on the attached resolution. And I'm going to step up to the podium. I'm making the presentation. I will move somewhat quickly because a lot of this information is very similar to what you've seen before, so I'll try to spend more time on anything that might be a little bit different or new. And then following my presentation, George Size and Adina Messinger have an update on sidewalks and greenways. So you'll get a couple of different views tonight. As you all know, the purpose of this plan is really as a planning tool. It's not a budget in and of itself. That comes on an annual basis in the spring. But it does allow us an opportunity to prioritize projects, and we have a very detailed ranking criteria that we have a CIP committee that's listed in your document. And I do want to point out, too, before I continue, that all of the department heads who have any projects in the CIP are here tonight. So if you have any detailed questions, we can pass those along to the appropriate staff to try to respond to tonight. It also helps us with our financial planning as we have an opportunity to match our capital needs with our expected revenues through future years. It also helps us with our credit rating so that when we do borrow money, we want the absolute best credit rating we can get. And having an approved capital improvements plan every year sends a message to the financial world that the town of Carrboro is paying attention to its capital needs and taking care of its infrastructure. And again, this gives us an opportunity to review active projects, take a look at cost updates, and to look out over the six-year planning horizon. We're really, this year, and much like past years, but we're really focused on taking care of what we have in this six-year CIP, looking at taking care of existing facilities, our vehicles, and equipment, and also focusing on you all's priorities of trying to make sure that we have a safe, walkable, and a green-friendly or green-oriented community. And I think you'll see most of the projects in this document fall into one of these categories. We're seeing a lot of things underway. Our sidewalk and greenway program is underway, and you'll get a more detailed update in a few minutes. Our reviews are underway for the new fire station. We hope to begin construction of that next calendar year. We also are continuing to look forward towards the Martin Luther King Jr. Park, though you'll see that that's been shifted a little to balance out the expenditures over the next 6 years. Some of the later initiatives, the public works facility, town parking lots, will continue us on our road to making sure we have good capital projects and things that meet the needs of the community. But they, again, have been pushed out towards the end of the six-year planning horizon, again, trying to make sure that we take care of the most important things first and that we don't outstrip our ability to have the revenues to pay for some of these projects. Some of the changes, if you've looked at the CIP, you'll note that overall the six-year CIP drops by a little over $400,000. And the big change there is looking at revising our vehicle and equipment replacement schedule so that we've are stretching some things out, and so we'll be reducing some of those proposed expenditures over the next 6 years. You'll also see some increases. The Northern Fire Substation includes the fiber optic cable that'll help connect the fire station with our other town facilities. Information technology has decreased because we've worked hard over the last several years to get technology in all of our departments, and now we're in more of a maintenance situation than we are in acquiring new information technology equipment. Inflation has hit the cost estimates for the MLK Junior Park, our sidewalks, street resurfacing, and our major reconstruction project with Weaver Street. And then with parks and maintenance, which and taking care of
our existing facilities, looks at replacing some tennis courts at Wilson Park and the basketball courts at Anderson Park. Again, not new, but simply replacing what we have. So I'm not going to go through all these, but you can see the bottom line is a little less than $422,000 reduction in proposed expenditures over the next 6 years.
Steve, could you help me understand something?
Sure. Yes, ma'am.
I thought that we were pushing out the park until 11-12.
Mm-hmm.
But here it has the CIP for the park under 9-10. What?
That is confusing, but when it says CIP 9-10, that just means 9-10 through 14-15. It's a full 6 years. And
okay.
That's the cost estimate based on today's dollars has gone up from last year.
The table compares the previously adopted plan, which is labeled
right.
There CIP 0809.
Right. They're both comparing the 6 years.
The total for the 6 years.
The total for the 6 years, yes.
It might have been a little better if that. Okay.
Yeah.
It
probably would have been less confusing had we labeled it CIP 910 through 2014-15
yeah.
and then
right.
0809 2013-14. Mm-hmm. We'll try to remember that
that's
for
okay.
next year.
That's my problem more than yours.
That's
why it adds up to the remarkable sum of $33 million.
Yeah.
We'd have a hard time coming up with that next year, but,
so
but that's a good question.
And so the same would be true for, like, the public works facility?
Yes, ma'am.
All of that.
Okay.
All of that. Yeah, it's all based on the six-year plan.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Some examples of some things that have been done. The Century Center emergency generator is fully functional now. The northern area sewer outfall has been completed. Pleasant Drive and Cheek Street sidewalk construction, which is part of a Phase 1B project, has been completed. The Gary Road storm sewer replacement has been completed. We've completed sidewalk enhancement projects, Jones Ferry Road, Old Fayetteville Road, Brewer Lane, and then we've replaced a number of pieces of vehicles and equipment. Share a few pictures just to, because pictures are worth 1,000 words, and it'll show you some of the things that we've done. Isn't that a beautiful generator? George is very proud of it. Now I want you not only to watch, but hopefully listen carefully for the next one. This is our new sewer line outfall.
Very nice.
We're so proud.
Sounds good.
Sounds you got to lighten things up a little bit, right?
You know?
this is the Gary Road culvert replacement project. The Brewer Lane sidewalk, one of our new trucks. You know, guys and their toys, we like to blow horns. Another, our leaf truck. Some examples of some of the other capital projects that are underway but not yet completed. As you all know, the design consultants have been selected for both Bowling Creek and the Morgan Creek Greenways. The Wilson Park bathroom construction, those plans are under review in the planning department, and we hope to get that out for bid shortly. Our new fire substation, again, we're reviewing plans for that. We hope to begin construction and do the financing in the next calendar year. The Weaver Street reconstruction project, which is a huge project for the town, is in the design phase with construction starting in the next fiscal year. James Street sidewalk, we made a commitment to try to get that started this fall. That has gotten started. Many of the other bond-funded sidewalk projects are in the design phase, and the disc golf course project is underway with design and fundraising by the park project. Again, a few pictures. This is the Wilson Park bathroom design, which I think you all have seen before. This is one of the elevations of the new fire substation, and when completed, it should look pretty similar to that. Picture of the existing Weaver Street. That's, again, a very big project that we'll be starting on next year as well. Looking at this $33 million CIP program, you can see over a third of the projects are composed of maintenance of facilities and replacement of existing vehicles and equipment, about $11 million. And those are highlighted in the, I guess, the greenish color on the screen. So that's pretty significant. As in past years and as with most CIPs, because they're long-term capital projects, the bulk of the CIP funding would come from financing, either through general obligation bonds or installment financing. That amounts to about 81%. And that's typically done for capital projects because you try to match the financing at least with the life of the project to be completed. And all of these, the life of the project should exceed the time that we'll be doing the financing for. And then not insignificant is about 4.2%, or about $1.4 million out of this amount, is made up of grant funding that the town expects to receive to help with these projects. As you all know, we continue to work on the sidewalk bonds. We're issuing bond anticipation notes until we get to that 4.6 number that the voters approved in 2003. Or if you all decide you want to do something less than that, you've got the opportunity to issue something less than the full $4.6 million. We've mentioned the MLK Park. We are proposing delaying that by a year. Every year when we look at the CIP, we try to make sure that we don't have any ballooning effects, so that we don't have a big impact on the tax rate in any one fiscal year. So we try to even things out as much as we can to avoid that. So delaying that, because we've got the fire station coming on and the cost associated with the fire station and the issuance of sidewalk bonds, then also pushing out the potential for parking lots and the public works facility until 2014-15 or beyond. Now, I say that about the public works facility, but I've got one more picture to share with you, and you're going to see why we could make a real good argument for moving that project up, not back. This was Tropical Storm Hanna back earlier in the fall on a Saturday morning. I came by there, and it looked like a lake. And George has, you know, had the foresight on Friday to make sure all the vehicles and equipment were moved to high ground, so that you don't see any vehicles or equipment sticking up out of that water. But in order to lead his troops, George had to boat across. So we appreciate George's leadership and in that. But
Steve, the figure for $8,900,000 for the public facility in 2014-15 and beyond, is that what we would anticipate at this date that it will cost us in that year?
I believe that's correct.
You know, like for example, if we build it next year, it would be some number less than that.
I think that, is that correct, Bing?
We have not been increasing that number.
You have not? Okay. Well, I stand corrected. So it's, I guess it's far enough out that we haven't. At one point we were increasing it, but that was back when we thought we might have a more realistic shot at building it sooner, because the cost estimate was based originally on a 2005 study that we had done by an architectural firm.
And when we get to that, is that a single-year cost or a multi-year cost in terms of how can we build that in stages over several years and spread the costs out? Or?
It possibly could be done in stages. It'd be more expensive. The idea for that would be to try to do it all at one time, but the financing would be probably installment financing, much like we're doing with the fire station over a 15-year period.
And Steve, what value will this land have once Public Works moved? This land that Public Works is on right now. I mean, I know you can't say a figure, but you know, it's in a,
well, it's a great location, and
really
sometimes waterfront. But I think there's some opportunities for the town to look at several different options there, because it's right there on the bypass. And
we do need a pool.
Well, on
what year is that?
Sorry. See it on the list.
It's out there. Well, you all seen enough of George in his boat. All right. Looking forward, a good segue because with the pool, because there are a lot of things, despite this $33 million plan, there are a lot of things not in this plan, and you've seen this list before: town hall renovations, an outdoor pool, greenways beyond those that were a part of the 2003 bond referendum, a gymnasium, the Robertson Street improvements, a number of other local road improvements, and bike and ped improvements beyond what's currently in the pipeline. So pretty long list of things that couldn't even fit into to this one. Is there a question, Jackie?
No, it's something I'm trying to formulate in my
It hasn't become a question yet.
Okay. All right. I won't force one. One of the things that we always do, and that you all have seen this before, is looking at the impact of the capital improvement plan on the operating budget, on our fiscal condition, and debt. And we always try to look to make sure that any debt that the town issues is proportionate in size and growth to our tax base, that we never use debt to balance the operating budget, that we try to make sure it's not an excessive burden on our operating expenditures, and that we don't issue too much debt so that it has a negative impact on our credit rating. And this just gives you a snapshot of how we compare with our peers. And you've seen these numbers in the CIP, so I'm not going to go through all those. I will just say that we're within appropriate ranges in all those ratios, the local government commission, as well as the fiscal policy that this board adopted several years ago. And when we prepare the CIP, we always look to make sure we're not bringing you any recommendation that would exceed the LGC guidelines or our own internal fiscal policies. And we don't ever hit that high debt burden that's defined by the local government commission. We also looked at, the potential impact of the CIP on our property tax rate. And if you look at that, what we try to do is just show an equivalent. We're not saying that's what it does to the tax rate, but we're just saying this many dollars equals this many cents on the tax rate. We obviously have very few revenue sources. Property taxes are our prime source, sales tax a second to that. So all of these projects are with the caveat that, you know, we have to look at what our revenues look like, we have to look at what the tax rate looks like, and we have to make decisions accordingly. This plan, as in past years, will move us further along in protecting and enhancing our existing facilities, but at the same time maintaining the town's very positive fiscal health. Again, we've tried to give you all a plan that minimizes any ballooning effect on the tax rate in any one particular fiscal year. Some of these projects may only be talked about. They may get pushed out even further as economic conditions unfold over the next few years. And obviously, again, this is not a budget. Any of these projects have to be reviewed as a part of the annual budget process. And so even something approved in the CIP is not guaranteed to be funded when you all approve the annual budget. And you see in red, particularly, I think, this year with the economic environment being what it is, and I don't think anybody's really sure if we bottomed out yet or not, we certainly didn't want to be in a position of recommending anything of significance to be added to the CIP. Already there are a number of things left out that we know could easily be placed in from a justification standpoint and from a public policy standpoint, but simply not enough dollars to do it. So I'd be happy to answer any questions you all have, and then we'll turn it over to Adina and George.
Jackie and then Randy.
I've been thinking about this for quite a while. There's one thing missing from the process, the CIP process, and from the document, and that is years ago we decided that in order to pay for some of the things that the town wanted, like the park and the public works facility and greenways and other things, that we would increase the density downtown in order to increase our non-residential tax base so that we could have the services that citizens were asking for, or that some citizens were asking for, without increasing the individual homeowners' property tax. And that was our economic development plan, right? That was how we were going to do this. I would somehow like to see some of the project, and this is outside the paradigm of how things are normally done, I understand that, but I would like to somehow see some of the projects tied to when more money comes in. So, for instance, when some of the downtown projects that are supposed to be and will bring in non-residential taxes, that when they come online and when the taxes from those begin to come in to our revenue stream, that at that point, when they can pay for things like the park, like the public works facility, like some other things, that that's when we build them. Now, I know you're looking kind of like, well, because I understand that that's not how things are normally done. But for years, we've been telling our citizens that we're doing this increased density and this non-residential density downtown in order to increase the tax base so that we can do these things. And I'm not saying don't do these things. I'm not saying don't do the CIP, and I'm not saying don't do the projects. But I'd like to see them tied so that the non-essential things, the things for which we're hoping to get the money from the downtown redevelopment, when that money's available, then we do the parks and things that aren't immediately. Otherwise, what we've been doing doesn't gel. And I'm not saying this in any way politically, cynically, or anything. It's just that that's not being included in how we're planning for the future. We're not planning on this new revenue stream. And I think we should, because that was the whole purpose of it. Does that make sense to anybody? And we're not considering that when we're talking about the CIP. I know it's a different paradigm from how these things are normally done, but that's how we've been selling our economic development plan, and that, from my understanding, has been why we've been going the route that we've been going. So let's officially tie them together. Otherwise, I think we're setting our homeowners up during a rough time for some property tax increases that they can't afford. So let's officially find a way to tie them together. This may be a conversation for the retreat, but I'm pretty serious in bringing it up.
So you're saying cannot authorize a capital expense until we've had new property tax, commercial property tax revenue to help pay for it?
Non-essential things. I'm not saying that for sidewalks and roads and vehicles. I'm saying it more like for parks
or that type of thing.
Or that kind of thing.
Or yes. Would you, I think we've thrown around the idea in the future, having the, you know, hotel tax that could be potentially designated towards maybe park development. Is that more?
I don't know if that can go towards park development.
Well, some of it's restricted.
Yeah, some of it's very restricted, like to the arts. But the general tax from the hotel can go towards anything we want it to go to, but not that.
But when you said assigned, I was wondering if.
No, I mean to let, like, since this is what we said our economic development plan was, let's make that come alive and tie.
And connect that.
And connect it to non-absolutes.
Well, I think, you know, I haven't really thought about this, Jackie, but one approach might be for future CIPs would be to go through, give staff a stab at it first, but then bring it to you all to sort of define what would be considered essential and what's not essential, and maybe consider the more traditional CIP process for what everybody would agree would be the essential projects that, I mean, let me take the fire station.
The fire station,
I mean,
the fire station is essential.
Right, choice in that if we wait until there's new revenue for that, then
we can't.
I don't know
right.
when that might
exactly.
happen. But, I mean, that's part of the reason that we pushed out the development of MLK Park, because mm-hmm. of this ballooning effect and knowing that it's, while it's certainly a nice thing, but if you noticed in the note, one of the options there, as opposed to doing the parking, was to continue to using it, mm-hmm. to use it the way it's being used.
Right.
I mean, it's not used
pretty heavily
now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that can be a short-term option. Right. It could be a longer-term option. So I think if you'd give us a chance to kind of think about how to frame that so
yeah.
that maybe we have a smaller CIP and do something with some of those non-essential projects that would be a little bit different, because what I would hate to do is hold up the whole CIP
right.
for those kind of things, because that would make it very difficult to plan.
No,
we have a built-in increase in revenues.
Definitely not what I was saying
And I think, I mean, this is what kind of strikes me about it is, I think at some level both of you are talking, you know, I think Steve has done at some level, maybe a subconscious
yeah.
level, kind of what you're describing,
yeah.
thinking about, well, this, you know, when can we really afford to do these different things, and has tried to strike a balance
mm-hmm.
between when we'll have money and how grave the need
yeah.
is.
And
for
that's
the
part
thing.
Of the reason for that unfunded list that didn't even make it in there, because
right.
recognizing that there's not money there
right.
to
but
do
like
the gym.
I appreciate nonetheless what your point is, Jackie, and it you know. I mean, it makes sense, makes common sense to me,
mm-hmm.
I think it's something the manager can think about.
I was going to go to Randy. Big bucks, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Randy.
I just had a question about, there's the summary table of the impact of the CIP on debt ratios,
mm-hmm.
and if the narrative on per capita debt increases.
What page are you looking at? I'm sorry.
I'm looking at page 3.2 and the table 3.3. And it may just be the way I read it, so I just want to make sure it's clarified. It says the town's per capita debt is currently the highest fiscal year 08-09 at $513 per capita in fiscal year 08-09. And then per capita debt increases to $602 in fiscal year 09-10. But on the table, it says 459. So just tell me if I'm misreading that.
If you'll look on page 3.3, Randy, at the column fiscal year 08-09,
yeah.
go down where it says without additional debt, go to estimated ratios, and then go to debt per capita.
Uh-huh.
That's the 513. Do you
uh-huh.
see that?
Yeah.
That's where that number came from in the narrative. If you go on down, it says with the additional debt, projected budget plus additional debt service and so forth.
Right.
Go down to fiscal year 09, 010, and you'll see debt per capita, $602.
Oh, okay.
You see?
Okay.
So it
okay.
does match with okay. with the narrative.
I was looking across.
It's depending on whether it's with or without additional
that's
debt.
That's right.
Right.
I can see it's a little confusing, but that's how it matches
okay.
up.
No. Clarified. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
What? I read
the document. Is saved.
I get points. I read the document. What can I tell you?
No, there's no points for reading.
I was
just for showing it.
I was impressed. All right.
Steve, I want to go from Jackie's kind of general abstract point mm-hmm. to something very particular mm-hmm. in terms of the economic uncertainty they were under right now, of not knowing what the next 6 months, year, or 2 years will be. And when I looked through this document, it was very much in mind that question of the essential versus non-essential, meaning are there things that we could not do in the rest of 08 or 09 or in 09-10 until we have a better sense of the stability of the economic environment, and so to have more room to cushion the citizens from possible, you know, in terms of their ability to pay their taxes in the years ahead. And really the one area that stood out was in the sidewalks. where, you know, we've got, you know, the neighborhoods have gone without sidewalks from when they were built till now. And so, I mean, clearly we all want to build them as soon as we can and create that walkability. But I guess the question I want to raise is, if you've thought, and or whether you think it would make sense for us to think about the remaining Phase 1B projects that are listed in Table 2, and I guess what part is going to be in the next presentation. Mm-hmm. Obviously, James Street is under construction, right. So we need to finish that.
Right.
But other than that, some of those have expenses this fiscal year, and there's a whole bunch of them that do next year to the tune of nearly $2 million.
Right.
So, you know, I guess the question is the implications of putting those on hold for either or both of those fiscal years, and have you thought about that?
I have, and we've, you know, thought ever, as I'm sure you all have, since the beginning of the sidewalk project, and the prep work on the sidewalk bonds was done just prior to my having come here, because I came in September of 2003, and the groundwork had been laid for the November referendum. But I believe, and those who were on the board at the time or in the community can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the voters were told that it's up to the 4.6. There was never a guarantee that the town would spend the full 4.6.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've operated on the assumption that that could happen, and so that's how we've laid out the project. But if you noted in some of the narrative, we've said up to the 4.6, and I think the bond anticipation notes are around 2.6 million right now. I mean, the board could choose to stop at that amount temporarily and pick it back up later. You could choose to say this is it and we're going to go ahead and turn those bond anticipation notes into general obligation bonds and start paying off the principal, because, you know, right now all we're paying is interest on the debt, on those notes, so we're not paying down any of the principal while we're issuing the notes.
I guess my question really has two parts. I guess one would be if the rest of the board would want in the very near future to look at get some information from you on whether there's significant costs that we could defer from 08-09 on the sidewalk projects, and then also that when we get to the 09-10 budget that we could, I mean, then it would be very easy to look at what's the budget with the sidewalks or without, or how they fit in, and we'll know better by then whether that's even a question we need to be concerned about. And what do you all think? Would you be interested in seeing that 08-09?
I agree with that. I mean, my concern going into, we don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
You know, and I do know that we have residents that are feeling the strain. Mm-hmm. So anything we can do to lessen that burden and to not create a new burden, while at the same time being able to maintain what we have, I think that's what I'm interested in most, is to be able to maintain both our human and our physical infrastructure as we go through this point. And I would much rather delay some sidewalks than to have necessary positions go unfilled or not be able to meet the needs of our employees. So I'd rather, you know, take care of our human infrastructure and maintain our roads and maintain what we have. And as you said, these are neighborhoods that they've done okay without sidewalks. And it's not that they're never going to get sidewalks. I also have this feeling that maybe in a couple years there's going to be a national push for infrastructure development and infrastructure maintenance, and there may be some federal
help.
Yeah. I mean, since last Tuesday, the whole world's going to get better immediately. But I mean, you keep hearing about the infrastructure needs of the country, and I'm wondering if that might not affect our sidewalks. It might affect some other things. But I agree with you that I wouldn't mind delaying things like that.
Let me mention one thing, and George, please run up and correct me if I'm wrong, but looking at the memo that George and Adina prepared, it looks like in terms of sidewalks that after James Street, everything else would the construction date would fall into fiscal year 09-10. Is that accurate, George? I mean, it looks like Shelton, Bim, Ash, and all of those fall into the next fiscal year. So probably the savings for the current fiscal year would be wherever we are with the design would be, you know, not to go any further if the board made that decision. You know, the flip side of that is these aren't getting any cheaper. And
right.
So
I could see finishing what we've started, but
need
not
to be
starting
mindful that
new.
We might not ultimately do as many sidewalks if the costs go up. But
so is the implication of that then that basically the $800,000 in this year's budget is, in fact, that's the cost of the James Street, or most of that is that?
I think that was originally the.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that kind of answers that
question. I think the upshot of that is that this is an interesting issue that we'll have to deal with as you develop your proposed 09-10 budget. Is that?
I think that's where the biggest bang for the buck will come from, but I think, George and Adina, we want to go back and look at those other projects immediately following James Street to see where we are, and George may be planning to share this with the design to see if we need to slow down anything.
Steve, I'm kind of unclear. If something was put, like, on hold, okay, and let's say James Street is finished, but other projects are put on hold, how does that affect, like, the bond anticipation notes?
Well, we'd have to continue to reissue, correct me, Bing, if I'm wrong, we'd have to continue to reissue those notes until the board made a decision this is all that we're issuing, and then we turn those anticipation notes into the actual general obligation bonds. It's at that point that we would start paying principal and interest. But again, right now, and that's another thing to consider, we're paying those interest costs during any delays.
Any delay. That's okay.
And we're not paying down any of the principal.
So we'd kind of, if we were to envision a scenario like that, we'd really kind of have to play out and play with the numbers some to see if it'd be worth our while, considering that the longer you delay, the cost is going to go up. Okay.
The other thing to think about is the bonds are authorized for 7 years automatically. Mm-hmm. There is up to a 3-year extension that requires local government commission approval. My guess is we would get that, but sort of the drop dead date would be the fall of 2013. That would be it. We couldn't extend the financing beyond the fall of 2013.
I know we often talk about the bonds like streets and greenways, but are they actually two separate bonds?
No.
They're all one bond.
The bulk of the money was proposed for sidewalks. About $300,000 was in the total 4.6 to be used as matching funds for greenways. That's where the 20% match is coming from for the Bowling Creek and the Morgan Creek greenway design.
I'm open to this discussion, but I'll say that you know, I really view the proposed Estes Drive extension sidewalk as, you know, a much more pressing need than really. I won't make invidious comparisons. I view it as a very pressing need, and I'm open to the discussion, but I'm really reluctant to let go of moving forward with that project, just me personally. That's where I am. Anyway,
well,
or to delay it, I guess, for that.
Shall we move attachment A?
Yeah, I think so.
So move.
All right. Attachment A has been moved.
But we're not done with the presentation.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, George and Adina have a...
Oh, okay. I thought that was separate.
But if you want to go ahead.
I'm used to approving it before George gets a chance to see anything.
Poor George.
And George and Adina, if I misstated anything, correct me when you get up here.
George in the boat said it all.
George didn't know he was taking that boat ride.
No advance warning on that.
their piece out separate? No, it doesn't. Okay.
Good evening, everyone. I'll be giving a brief overview of the sidewalk programs, as Steve said, and then Adina is here also to talk about the Greenway projects. The last update was in June of 2008, and as we were just talking about the bans, we talked at that time about reissuing the ban through May 9th, and you'll see that in the table I have in a moment. There's not a lot of changes since then, but there are a few things to report. I know you've seen this before, but this is just a reminder as to what we've accomplished. And I always like this slide because of the continuity of some of the projects. I know I'd mentioned that before as well, but when you see on Greensboro and then the stubs coming off Williams and filling in Hannah Street and Bowling Forest and so forth, and then, of course, James Street we're talking about is over here, a big section that will tie in, which is over close to the school. And I have a few other here as well. So there's about 1.9 miles. Total to date, we've completed just under 3 miles of sidewalks. And these are the enhancement and Phase 1B projects that have been completed. Three of the enhancement projects were in contracted, and I'm proud of the fact that we did do in-house one of the smaller projects here up by the post office. In your report, there's a table showing the remaining Phase 1B projects, and I'm sure we'll have some more discussion about that, which shows their completion dates, tentative completion dates, and also Attachment A in the report graphically shows the tentative timeline for the remaining projects, and I'll go over that in just a few minutes. While you're contemplating this, the board last June directed staff to expedite the James Street project. A neighborhood meeting was conducted at the end of June. We had favorable response because the project basically had been redesigned. During the summer, utilities were relocated. In August and September, the gas line was moved to the opposite side of the street. Water main conflicts have been addressed. I just want to point out that our street superintendent, David Poitras, was very active in getting all that done. Now, also at this time, Ted, in our office, we had to obtain 4 permanent drainage easements, 6 temporary construction easements on 6 different properties, one that was changing hands. Unfortunately, we were able to do that, and plans were completed. Bids were opened in the first week of October and approved by the Board of Aldermen at October 21st regular meeting. You may recall that the bids came in under the engineer's estimate. That was the first good news in a long time. With other parts of construction not doing so well, we got a lot of bids, competitive bids, and good numbers. But even so, the James Street project, the 3,400 feet, is $500,000, which is about $147 a running foot. And the estimates back when we started looking at this project in 2003-2004 were on the order of $30 and $55 a running foot. So, as I've mentioned before, costs in some cases have doubled and also tripled. I just want to got a couple of photos here for show you on James Street. If you've not been down by the post office lately, the post office is on this side over here. There's a mail truck right here. And we've gone to great lengths to maintain this buffer that you'll see along here. The sidewalk will be coming along here. I know all the pipe is on the other side, but that's for the staging purposes. And here is a few days later after the election. We have a lot of pipe going in, a lot of activity. And again, this is the 100 block. The post office is over here, looking from the other end. And the other reason for showing this, as I mentioned before, it's a lot more than just sidewalk, storm drainage improvements. And this particular project has a great number of retaining walls and railings in an effort to maintain the tree line on the west side of the street. And here is another photo showing the pipe going in under across the street. Here's the remaining timeline, and this is in your packet. We see James Street. Oops. Here, and as you may recall, when we were asked to expedite this, the original completion date was back here in May, June, with bids award in November and December, and we were able to basically accelerate it by about 2 months. But the there has been construction going on basically with all the relocations through the summer, easements and so forth. And because we threw most of our eggs in the James Street basket, the other projects have subsequently been delayed somewhat and have been put out in the timeline by a couple of months, if not a few more months, and you see the numbers here. I just wanted to point out some of the issues that we're still faced with. On Shelton Street, we have an updated design, which is probably going to require another neighborhood meeting. There's an outstanding petition from the neighbors there for not building a sidewalk, which still needs to be addressed. Several temporary construction easements. Bim Street, from Jones Ferry to Fidelity, we realize that there's a significant conflict with the 24-inch water main, conflicting with our storm sewer, which has set us back a little bit, and we also have to figure out how we're going to treat the sidewalk down here along the lower parking lot. Ash Street, although there's not major design issues, we have several temporary construction easement. Estes, and let me just kind of show down here on the timeline. Sorry, I forgot to point these out. We have met with the DOT, Chuck Edwards, many of you know him, out of the Graham office, and we're trying to work out the lane width in the western section where it's very narrow. And again, we've had to redesign the eastern end of the project where bike lanes have since been installed. So we've been having to do significant redesign work there, as well as we're going to need to buy right-of-way from about five or six properties. Coming down to Pine Street, we need a design modification next to an oak tree. We also need 18 temporary construction easements. We have a lot of driveways where we're going to have to work around, and permanent drainage easements. Elm Street, Weaver to Shelton, again, no particular design easements, but a lot of temporary construction easements and so forth. Davie has the last street that's shown here, which goes from Jones Ferry up to basically Fidelity, where Westbrook Cemetery is. We have challenges with the trees, what we're going to do there in front of the cemetery and the close proximity of the graves. And we also need to buy nine pieces of right-of-way and 11 temporary construction easements. So this is our plan based on available staffing and the workload. Also remind everybody that we're trying to work on the Weaver Street reconstruction project, which, as Steve mentioned, design is in progress right now with construction in a 9-10, probably late 9-10. And then Dina has a table to talk about, and then I have one more slide after that.
Good evening. This is the same table that you have in your packet, attachment C3, and essentially what it is showing are projects that are in the CIP that is being presented this evening, which the town has also sought STPDA funds. And the first two projects are the Morgan Creek and Bowling Creek Greenways, which Steve had mentioned and which I think you're all familiar with. Not a whole lot new to report there, except that it could be as early as this month to get started on the planning for those projects, so that's very exciting. The two other projects that are listed in this table were presented at last year's CIP, and the board requested that the town make a proposal to the MPO for STPDA funding for those projects, and in April, these projects were allocated funding, and you can see that they were allocated that funding for fiscal year 2010. Though I do provide a note that based on the MPO's budget for that funding year, there could be some requests to move that out to another year, but that will not be determined until this coming spring. But that's pretty much it for me if you have questions.
The first note kind of doesn't even need to be highlighted in red. So it was like 5 years ago,
yeah,
going on 6 years ago, and I'm presuming that the same thing is happening with these costs, as George just told us happened with the sidewalk costs. So
absolutely,
these numbers could really be double or even triple what what's actually up there.
Absolutely, and we're really hoping that through the planning process we'll get a much better estimate of how much those costs have gone up.
One other thing for the board to be thinking about as we think about whether to delay anything. You see the total cost and you see the town's share. I would encourage us not to risk losing those dollars because we leverage a tremendous amount of money with our $441,000.
That's why I didn't include these when I raised the point about the sidewalks.
Is that a percentage?
Yeah, there's the split is 80-20, so it's 20%.
So if the numbers are tripled, then our percent could also be tripled.
It's based on a percentage, but the numbers are pretty set. And if we do find that the Greenway costs have doubled, what we would need to do is go back to the MPO and request additional funding. And they have some provisions for doing that for projects with cost overruns. So we could look into that.
Our cost would stay at 440?
No, our cost would still double, but the amount of money that we have does not increase with the our costs.
That's why, I guess, on the same, well, no, it's not that sheet. I won't jump ahead of you, George.
Okay.
You go ahead.
Okay. One last slide. And you've seen variations of this before showing the funding constraints. The upper block shows the ban amount to date, which Steve mentioned was just roughly 2.6, and we were here in August requesting the cash flow up through May. The next block shows shows bond costs and accumulation to date. Here's the bond amounts, accumulative amount, and here's the roughly $2.5 million left in Phase 1B, and $500,000 of that is James Street. And then the funding for the greenways, which you just saw in the earlier slide, this amount right here, here's the total that we would be at for one if we did all that stuff. And then some of the additional projects that have been talked about, and we were just looking at on that table, leveraging other funds for the multi-use path, and here's the same numbers that you saw on Adina's table, the 42,171 and the Roger Road town share of the 107. And the last section then shows the total anticipated costs as compared to the bond amount, and roughly 4.4, the bond amount 4.6. And again, you'll see these same notes that you saw in Adina's table. Greenway estimate was prepared in 2003, and I guess we're looking at these as variables that could significantly impact the cost of these projects. Get my arrow going again here. Greenway estimate is relatively old. Phase 1B projects, although we have updated them as we go along, are still based on preliminary plans. And then we have some monies in for right-of-way on Estes, but there still may be some unexpected costs. So all of this is a cautious approach to the spending, and the difference shown at the bottom, the $221,000, is being considered as contingency to help cover potential impacts from the variables that I just noted.
All right. Well, I'm persuaded that you know how to use Excel.
Thank you.
Are there questions for George?
Yeah. Actually, I guess this is just a point for Steve or George or whoever. I guess mostly for Steve, that I don't need this answered now. But it seems like if we do in the spring get to the point where we are considering delaying any of the sidewalks, when I look at the time chart that George showed, it seems like there are some steps coming up this spring, things like the design or the easement or the neighborhood meetings, that I don't know whether or not a delay would have implications on those. And I don't need you to tell me tonight, but I just wanted to raise that as a possible concern.
Well, let me address some of it, though, that we are in the process. In fact, the surveyors were out here on BIM Street today. You know, as we're moving forward on these, we're spending dollars on engineering design to do that. We have not acquired any of the easements and right-of-way yet on these projects, but you can see we're getting close as we final in on, we zero in on the final design. We would need that this lead time that's shown here, need to have all that in place by the time the bid award. So Shelton, BIM, Ash, Estes, we all have our consultant actively working on these projects. So somewhere along the line, we are going to need to decide here about pulling the plug in terms of.
I think looking at this timeline, and I was not looking at this timeline, Dan, when I responded to your question earlier about 08, 09 mm-hmm. versus 09, 10. I think probably sooner than later we need to come back to you all and get some direction about what you want to do with these projects, because if it looks like if we need to slow down on Shelton, BIM, and Ash, we need to probably do that pretty soon, because what I don't think we want to do is have another neighborhood meeting and raise expectations and then turn around 2 months later and say, whoops, we're putting that on hold. I know you all wouldn't want that, and I don't think the neighborhood would appreciate that.
Rest.
So what kind of time frame?
Well, I'm thinking very shortly after we come back from the break.
Okay.
Wouldn't you think, George?
Yes.
Because I don't think we want. I don't think we can really wait until the budget process for these next few projects.
Right. No, I.
But
you know,
wouldn't I mean just fiscally first? That's within the first quarter of the new year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, just based on economic forecasts, that might still be a little too early to see adjustments. In other words, we might be cutting.
I don't think the recession will be over by then.
No, exactly. But I'm also not sure that at that point they'll be able to forecast,
with Steve's economic crystal ball, I don't think we'll know that much more than now. But I think the point is, absent you all saying pretty quickly, we're not comfortable in moving forward. We don't know what it looks like for the next 6 months or year, so we just want to hold back and be very conservative. Absent that, I just don't think we're going to have a lot of hard facts to share with you all to help make that a really clear decision.
Can we have some just kind of generally updated numbers as well, cost estimates that are based on 08 and what our experience has been in the past for those projects instead of based on 03?
Well, if the 03 estimates that I think they were referring to were the Greenways estimates, and, of course,
some of the sidewalks too, weren't they? I
believe I mentioned that the sidewalks, we have updated estimates, but they are still based on preliminary plans. So that is one of the variables until we get the final design done. And I guess a good example of that is James Street. We had updated that back when I remember it was in the $300,000-$400,000 range, and then after the final design, it was in the $700,000 range. Bids came in right at 500,000. So those numbers, unlike the Greenways, have been inflated and adjusted as we've gotten better information and better pricing information since 2003.
Okay.
But as the notes again at the bottom, they're based on preliminary plans, so there is some chances for them to change, and I doubt that they would go down.
But the Greenway information, I mean, we'll be able to get better information as the work moves forward with the consultants on Bowling Creek and Morgan Creek. I mean, we don't really have a lot
anything
of really good information
out.
To really cost out beyond what was done in 03.
But would we have, and I guess that this is for Adina, would we have something for the consultants on the Greenway by January? Okay, so that's still too early. Yeah, okay.
I'd like to point out one of the things that we're going to need to consider in this is, we have roughly, these bottom seven projects. there is some value to having plans on the shelves for some of these things. And I think instead of just dropping everything as an example, we may need to pick and choose and finish some. And I'm speaking here from experience, having started before I came here reconstruction of Weaver Street, and we're trying to pick up 10 years later right. on partial plans, and I think it's costing us more money to right. do that. Right. So it may be advantageous to really do some of these projects, finish the design, not necessarily build them, but have something in the shelf that either we decide then money's okay. come available, or we decide that we have something ready to go.
Well, that's kind of thing we'll be looking to you for advice about, Mr. Manager, when you come back on this issue, and you're saying in January, probably. All right. Well, we'll look forward to that. I'm sure we'll the newspapers will print this discussion, and we'll hear from people interested in sidewalks. Okay. I'm sorry. Did you?
I just want to, number one, I want to comment you on the special effects of your presentation. I like them very much. First time I see them, and encourage you to keep practicing them. Makes during this gloomy economic forecast makes us smile more. Thank you for this CIP. It is this is what I call a no-frills CIP. We are lucky to have a brilliant staff and a brilliant manager who give us. Takes care of the basic needs, the most urgent needs of this town, and spoil us with our ideas of maintaining a, you know, green community, walkable, and strengthening the infrastructure that we need to attract the businesses and keep generating the revenue that we need to someday hopefully get to the other list that we would love to see. Yes. But, you know, you always, it's hard to balance all, juggle all these balls. We want things, and you put always first the fiscal health of this town. I think all the taxpayers in this town should be, we're very grateful for the management and the staff that we have, because it saves us money and at the same time help us maintain the quality of life that we have. So thank you for putting a no-frills CIP, Mr. Manager.
I have just a quick question. It's kind of a historical question. When the sidewalk and greenway bond was passed, was it with a certain percentage that was going to go towards sidewalks, go toward greenways, was there those priorities the board made after it was passed?
I really wasn't here up until 2 months before it, so somebody may want to jump in. But the roughly $300,000 was, as I recall, the board made a decision early on in looking at a list of priorities of sidewalks and greenways to allocate that $300,000 to be used as match money for the federal dollars, and that stayed constant.
Okay. And I guess the second question is, some of these figures that are here, when we look out several years, like when I was asking about public works, and you know, these are today's dollars, and as if they were spent in 14-15 or 15-16, and so we know it'll be a whole lot more. And this is, I guess, maybe a question for Bing. Does it make any sense to just build in some kind of an inflation rate over these years, just to already know we have a little bit of padding in some of the figures, or not?
I think on a couple of the projects, they're somewhat due to placeholders because they're so far out in the CIP right now, and the public works in the parking lot. We wanted to spend emphasis on the maintaining our facilities, as well as a few like sidewalks and the greenways and the park ones in King Park. And the other two items are in the last column.
Yeah.
And as we move forward, we will, I think, begin designing and planning and being able to improve those assets. Mm-hmm. And we could take the 2005 study number and try to inflate them consistently.
It just sounds so discouraging to hear that we know with the sidewalks it's been kind of happening. With the greenways, it's going to be already so far off, and we know it'll go up some. It's just, I know, it's just a thought. So.
Well, and that's a good point, Lydia, and we can do that, but just to reemphasize what Bing said, when we get to the last year of the CIP, which is 14-15 and beyond, it really isn't much more than a placeholder.
Right,
but
right.
So many things can change between now and that time. And when we say 14-15 beyond, that doesn't mean any of these would necessarily start even in fiscal year 14-15. Now, the public works, I would like to move up, not back, but I think we have to be realistic about what we can afford, and with what the town has taken on with sidewalks and greenways to date, and with the fire station and maintaining vehicles and equipment that we've got to do, that's a pretty substantial list of projects for a town our size. And so I think those other things, as Jackie, I think, very correctly pointed out, we really got to look at when we can fit those other things into the mix. And some of those revenues that you were mentioning, Jackie, are probably several years down the road before we really see anything of significance from those developments.
Yeah. Okay.
I have a question.
Yes. Oh.
There's a motion on the floor, right?
Oh, I thought you said you have a question.
No, I was calling a question.
All right, it's been moved and seconded for, I think it's attachment A. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. I have to go in about 10 minutes, but...
me too.
All right, follow up on advisory board appointment and training process.
Yes. We don't have a presentation. This was actually, as you recall...
Something we requested.
You requested, and it got moved from an earlier meeting because we couldn't get to it.
Twice, I think.
Yeah, maybe so. Who's counting?
I like the suggestions.
I have a couple of comments. You want me to just
take... Yeah, I do want you to just...
You're on a time...
Blurt it out.
On the training for the advisory board appointees, I would like some facet of that or separate to it. Something for chairs, because I think that folks are on the advisory boards don't necessarily have a model to look at for the expectations for the roles of the chairs and how to conduct business and their role vis-a-vis the board and their duties in general. So I would just add that to it.
And relationship with staff.
Correct.
And I think we really need to let some of our chairs understand what they can fairly expect from staff and what their relationship is with staff, and that staff reports to the board. Staff reports to Steve, and Steve reports to the board, the Board of Aldermen, and that the staff does not report to board or commission chairs. And I think we need to be really clear on that, because in more than one instance there's been some boundary crossing. I think our job is to part of our job is to take care of our staff, and we need to make that really clear with chairs of boards and commissions.
So the first suggestion is that the chair training be included in the training for advisory boards, and the second recommendation I have is looking at how recommendations to fill appointments, and I think that based on what I've observed, I would recommend that the chairs they review applicants and they make they may fill out the forms on the applicants, but that we as the elected officials take the responsibility of, the recommendations, and not put the board chairs in the position of making specific recommendations. I think it helps to get some of their feedback and advisory board feedback, but not necessarily going out on a limb to make the recommendations. I think that one thing I've watched is that becomes a little tricky, and that ultimately the responsibility lies with us. So I think we should take on that responsibility. Then I had a question about term limits, and you know, I fully support that that should be in place, but it should be in place uniformly across the advisory boards. And I agree that the circumstances under which term limits are excused be upheld. You want me to go on? Bylaws.
Rena, can I ask you one question? So looking back at the guidelines for selecting advisory board members, attachment F1, the previous point you made, it looks like that is item 1A, where it says chair. So
it is 1A.
So did you go so far as to think of new wording for that, or do we need to come up with that based if we agree to that?
Yeah, I think the chairs, I think they the job they now have asks them to meet with the applicants, which I think that's fine. I think if they help outline the work of their advisory board to the applicant to find out their level of interest, I think if they fill out the summary, and I think if they act as a resource, I think that's fine. So I think if we want to work in those terms, that would.
So they just would not complete the applicant's recommended form, is that?
Exactly. Yeah. I think that has to fall with us.
I don't know if necessarily I agree that the chairs have to meet individually with the applicants. I think the applicant coming to a meeting and seeing what it's about, but the individual meeting with the chair, I think in some ways really holds up appointments, because there are people who aren't available for long periods of time during the day, or, you know, it becomes very much a scheduling issue.
I agree that would be up to their mutual discretion.
And then also I have a concern that that you can get a really biased thing going on, even unconsciously. If somebody wanted to be on this board and they just met with, like, Mark, or they just met with me, then they would get
very work to do.
They would get just our perspective of it. And I know, like, I don't think the Arts Commission meets with people individually. Well, we don't have a chair right now. I think having somebody come to the meetings and then maybe during a break or something, but to have to set up an individual meeting with each applicant, I think that's one of the things that's causing a bottleneck in our getting positions filled. And I don't understand what that's for. I think coming to the meeting shows an interest, but to have this individual meeting could be kind of giving the chair an opportunity to see if that applicant shares whatever perspective that the chair has. And I don't necessarily think, I think one of the reasons we have advisory boards is to have many different perspectives, and I don't want people chosen because they share the same ideology with whoever happens to be the chair.
So I'm just thinking in conversation, an applicant would get to hear from the chair what the outline is for the advisory board, what the responsibilities are and what the roles are, you know, how to function on the advisory board. Because sometimes just coming to the meeting, they might not get the full perspective.
Well, we have
but
handouts.
That's okay. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I don't want clicks. Or I'd like to do away with clicks. Except for this one.
Anyway, Randy, you have some other points.
Yes. The bylaws. You know, I thought it was interesting that EAB, TAB, and the Planning Board have very well-written bylaws. The Planning Board, I know I was part of three folks, Dan Babbis, myself, and a former planning board person, worked on it. But I would like to see that if the bylaws are going to be, rather than each individual advisory board having a set of bylaws, that there be a Town of Carrboro bylaw template that all the boards adhere to. Is there some reason that maybe planning board needs to be slightly different because it's quasi-judicial, or?
They are not quasi-judicial.
Okay. So there could be a template that blankets the advisory boards, yes, in terms of?
Board of Adjustment.
Board of Adjustment may have different bylaws. Frankly, I haven't studied the bylaws, wasn't even aware that some of them had them, so I'm not really real sure exactly why they need bylaws. But maybe there may be things that the ordinance does not cover.
Some of the bylaws might not even be legal.
Well,
I think Randy's thinking of like just procedural rules, so everyone's on the same page as to how meetings are conducted. And
I mean, we can certainly do that.
And that's something I know Fleming Bell with the School of Government, when we had a training session, it's been several years ago now, that's one of the things he talked about. It was a short version of Robert's Rules or something like that, that I think we could come up with something that could govern how all the advisory boards operate their meetings rather than 12 different ways of doing business.
Except for the Board of Adjustment, which is a quasi-judicial forum, so they're not really an advisory board, per se.
Right. I don't think they were on that list, actually. And then minutes. I think part of the packet was a recommendation I made about minutes for all of the advisory boards, if they could follow a similar template. And the last one I have really is something that I see evolving, and that has to do with how email and the internet may be used by advisory boards to conduct business. And I just raise that almost more as a question: how do we want to, potentially frame the use of or constrain the use of email and internet to, advisory board either discussion or decision making. I know we ran into a couple things where questions came up about voting when they didn't have a quorum, when an advisory board didn't have a quorum, using the internet, and of course we just said no. But we've said that. I don't know that that's documented anywhere. That
so are you suggesting that should be in the bylaws?
I'm asking if there's that in anything else that needs to be addressed, internet and email use.
It certainly can be. It's it is a complicated subject, we could do that. I mean
it may be something that has to be, reviewed as technology changes and advances. But in the meantime, we're already bumping into the outer edges, because even though we can verbally say that now, as boards change and there's no real history of people remembering, we're not supposed to do it that way, we need to have it documented, I think, that, voting has to take place in the meeting and...
As I say, that can be addressed. It is not a simple subject, and as you say, technology does evolve. And we've had some discussion with, I don't know whether they were, they're not advisory boards, but some other issues come up about sort of simultaneous chat rooms and forums and all that sort of stuff.
Exactly.
It can be addressed.
Okay, that's my list.
No, I just agree that the public's business should always happen in public.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I have a few comments to say about what Randy brought up. I think one is, I agree that I don't think there's any need for the chair to meet with the applicant. I think it's fine to make the phone call, introduce whatever they come to the meeting. I don't know if I'm sold on us having to decide on all of those. I mean, I think as long as the advisory board has an open vote where they all vote, and it doesn't seem like the chair is the one who's making the decision. I mean, I could go either way on that, but I don't want it to become cumbersome on this board to have to review all these applications all the time and not be able to rely somewhat on a group that was able to do a more thorough interview with several people.
Well, I think Randy suggests, if I may, that we'd still get that summary
sheet. We should get it, right.
That summarizes the kind of qualifications of the different applicants and what they would bring to the board.
And just as a clarification, the current board adopted guidelines do give that authority to the chair only to make the recommendations, not the full board.
So most of the boards now are kind of voting on it when they. I mean, I guess that I know that with the planning board that started at some point that they all started having a say in the vote of it.
Right.
Okay.
But they could give input to the summary. Yes. It's just that it doesn't put the chair in the awkward position of having to make a single recommendation.
Or the board itself, the advisory board itself.
Exactly.
We still need to deal with the issue of chairs. I really think that the chair should be, I don't think it should be chair for life. I think that, you know, one or two terms as chair, you can, if there's a need, you can stay on the advisory board, but that needs to rotate through the board.
I think that we do that.
I don't think we do.
No, we're not talking about term limits. We're talking about within the advisory board.
Yeah, for the chair.
A chair that has consistently stayed chair. And yeah.
Because I think sometimes we've gotten to the point where the same person has been chair for many, 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 many years. And the other people on the advisory board who may want to be a chair don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, so they don't. So they don't step up, and I think, you know, maybe two terms as chair, and then it revolves. You can stay on the advisory board if need be, but we've.
How long is the term? The chair's term?
I don't know.
Well, you see, that's where the bylaws come.
Every year, but I mean, we've had instances where one person was chair, a very good person and a very good chair, but they were chair for almost 20 years,
right.
And that's just not. That doesn't give anybody else a chance.
Well, you know, so one point is on our guidelines, it says, you know, members are limited to two full terms. After completing the terms, they must take off a year before applying for reappointment. You know, however, exceptions may be made under these circumstances.
Right.
So I think that's the way to kind of try to maybe address some of that.
But that doesn't address the chair issue.
No, it doesn't, right.
It doesn't address the chair.
Just as the chair should be rotated?
I think the chairs should be rotated every year, frankly. I think it's, anyway, we can discuss that more later, but I don't think chair for life is necessarily a healthy situation.
And getting back to Lydia's point, there could be reasons why a person is seated on a board without that 1 year off. And in this case, it was. So it's not as simple as, you know, whether or not the person's in the advisory board. It's a question of the chairmanship, chairpersonship, being able to evolve.
So that may not be an issue that we can settle tonight,
right.
But I think we need to talk about.
Well, why don't we see if we can settle it tonight? Because I don't think it's rocket science. I mean, what if we said that a chair can serve for 2 years
or as chair. Mm-hmm.
And if there's no one available to be chair for one additional year.
So I think there's always somebody available
there should
to be,
be
chair.
So let's leave that up. So let's say, how about 2 years?
Yeah, I like that. I think that's fine.
Two-year limit on chairman.
Yeah,
but because let me go back to Dan's point for a minute. Let me just go back to Dan's point because I know it may be that a board could change significantly for various reasons because of turnover that could happen naturally or by, you know, just some odd circumstance where you wouldn't have anyone else present who could carry forth. And I'm thinking of things that happened in the EAB in the last year or so, where we've had tremendous turnover. You know, people had personal things, they moved, and so our chairmanship actually over the last 2 years switched 3 times. And if, you know, if we had somebody who would have been able to stay all the way through and maybe would have had to go beyond the 2 years, that might have been really helpful. So it may be that 2 years with the possible, you know, caveat, if it maintains the, you know, the flow of the advisory group, that might be important.
We can always make exceptions, right? To somebody else.
Yeah, I'd rather have a 2 year.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Jackie because I think, you know, if we've got an advisory board that's anywhere between 7 and 12 people, that can.
But you don't. Look, you see, right now, like EAB is all the way down to 5.
But that's 5.
Right. Yeah, so someone steps up, even if they're only doing it provisionally.
Or they can rotate the chair until.
But what I'm saying is, if our current chair rotated, you know, like next month, the only people who could possibly take it would be brand new, basically. But I'm saying that's a very weak position for an advisory group to be working from when they have somebody right there who could continue.
But that person can still contribute and can still offer history and guidance without having to be the chair.
I mean, you know, when I was on the Open Space and Trails Commission in Durham, it was 1 year term, and then it rotated around. And it's true. I mean, it really helped the just overall flow of the whole board, just to see different people in that position, because it opened up kind of other people to be able to talk in ways that they didn't talk before.
It's also a venue for developing town leadership is through chairmanship of different advisory boards, and it's a way of encouraging leadership.
So do we have consensus on 2 years?
I'd be comfortable knowing with 2 years flat if I know that the training component will be able to cover, you know, chairman's duties, chairperson's duties and responsibilities and roles.
Yeah, that'll be in the resolution.
Mm-hmm. So then.
Yeah, there should be an expectation, you know, from kind of pass on the torch.
Is there a motion?
I don't think Lydia.
I have two more things I wanted to talk about. One is, and this is just for us to kind of think about in these guidelines, you know, about how you can make exceptions to members being on a board under certain circumstances. One is to retain diversity on an advisory board. And just my question is just, I mean, I've heard diversity applied in several different ways. And I've heard it applied, you know, race. I've heard it applied where people live. I've heard it applied gender. I mean, it just, you know, just kind of, I don't know if there's any need for us to even think beyond that. But I almost think it can catch almost anyone in any way. Because there's so many different ways of, you know, what is retaining diversity?
And so that's a good, I think it's good that it's kind of amorphous.
Yeah.
Because every time you define it, somebody's not on that list.
Did you looking for the definition?
Or I'm just kind of, all I did was I just wanted to throw it out for us just to think through it, because it's more than just, you know, like the traditional sense of diversity. And I've seen it applied even on our boards geographically, for instance. You know, someone in town, someone out of town, and someone from the Hispanic community, you know, someone. I've just seen it different ways. So I'm just kind of throwing out there. Let's be aware of the fact that that's kind of a catch-all of lots of ways of diversity to get people on boards. Mm-hmm. The last point I wanted to make was.
Well, Lydia, wait, would there be some other way that you would phrase that, or how?
Well, my thinking is it's a way to almost keep someone on infinitely. Frankly, you could figure out some way to say someone's meeting some kind of diversity in some way and keep someone on. It could almost lead to abuse. But that's why I'm just saying, let's just just keep it in mind, just kind of be aware of it. If we have members maybe that seem to be on for long periods of time and there's no turnover, is there an abuse of that, of the interpretation of that word?
It also applies differently on different advisory boards. Like I'm thinking on ESC, for example, we have one member who's a business owner at Carborough Plaza. And, you know, we might think, well, you know, that's, you know, the out-of-downtown businesses need to have someone and that we would keep him on longer.
Yeah, so. Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. So the last, and the last point is, I was curious as to what boards we had that the Board of Aldermen liaison voted on. And, you know, and there's a chart in here that shows the different boards. Because really, I think I've always thought our role with advisory boards, you know, is to advise, to be a liaison, to let the board do their business, to not really overreach. And in that regard, you know, I almost think we shouldn't vote. And I when I look at a list of all of our advisory boards, it seems like there are only two or three that we do vote on. Because it's almost, I'm not going to say it would seem, you know, and we get our say when it comes to us. You know, this is the time for the citizens to kind of speak and make their recommendations. But for, you know, so the three that are listed, I think, Greenways, the town code, lists them as members, so they vote. And then Recreation and Parks is an appointed member, and some vote and some don't. For example, I don't vote.
I didn't vote when I was on it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. And then TAB has a member, but they don't vote. So it seems like, unless you're appointed by Human Services, maybe even the only one is Greenways, where we vote. And
I think that's important for Greenways because we represent the town at large. And I think,
in all of them, you do.
Well, you know, I think that's, I think...
You have to trust your
I think with Greenways, you know, when we were putting it together, we were looking at how do we, at least I was thinking, I don't want to speak for Jackie, but I was thinking that, you know, we're really in the position of having to advance, you know, the goals of the town. And I think that that's the way I saw that we could ensure that over a long period of time that the goals and objectives of the town of Carborough were going to be met through our votes.
Let me ask the board, I mean, do we want to be consistent? Either everybody votes or nobody votes. I mean, I don't see difference on the other boards. I mean, everyone is important, and might be a training period where we bring in that institutional memory or something, but I don't think we should be voting on those boards.
Yeah, I think we should be liaisons and not members.
Right.
Is there any particular reason otherwise that board liaisons would have membership?
No. I mean, it's just a total choice of the board.
Yeah.
Obviously, in most cases, there's simply liaison members. And for some reason, I'm sure it was not something I came up with. We were instructed to draft it this way for these particular boards, or I'm not even sure I drafted it. But individual choices. And obviously,
part of it might be Randy, too, because you and Jackie feel, or you certainly feel some, you know, you were there at the beginning of the commission and kind of, so these other ones have kind of been going along and we're just liaisons.
Well, I think it was because of how it was formulated. That the Greenways Commission, if you go back to the beginning of it, was members of this board, mm-hmm. members of Recreation and Park, members of mm-hmm. TAB, members of EAB, members of Planning, and then some citizens. But it was like boards within the town government getting together to form a commission, which is different than an advisory board, to discuss things. And we were representing this board. Other people were representing other commissions and advisory boards. And that's why there was this separate voice, which would be different than with Recreation and Parks or the Arts Commission or the Planning Commission or anything else. It was as a...
So you agree with Randy then, the Greenways, it should stay?
Yeah, I think it's different in that way. You know, and it's also... it's not necessarily a permanent organization either.
Right.
It was designed to get us through this design process. And part of that has been, you know, looking at consultants, looking at planners, looking at different things. So we are representing one of the entities that are coming together for this commission for this purpose. And that's why Randy and I have votes on that, or whoever the two representatives of this board would be. It's different in that sense.
So then that just leaves Recreation and Parks, which it sounds like is not controversial to have a liaison. But what about Human Services Advisory Commission? Has anyone been on that?
I think one of the reasons why the Human Services Advisory Commission person has a vote is because very frequently there are very few people on that commission. And so it was like a vote of, I mean, I haven't been on it in 5 years. And that the whole thing with all of these is that it wasn't that one day somebody sat down and designed a governance structure, that these things having evolved and been appointed over time and by different boards and for different reasons. And so it doesn't all necessarily look the same because they've been
designed by the same people who designed the CAMEL.
Exactly. So Human Services, I think, part of that is that sometimes you'll get there, there's three people. You know, so, oh, make them vote because we need one more vote. So, but I don't think there's any organizational or structural reason why they need that vote.
I mean, I feel there's a conflict of interest. I mean, this is the only board that makes decisions on money, $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
So depending who's going to be there and which preferences that person has, I mean, I think it would be safer not to have that person vote and get community members to decide, you know, where that money goes.
We try to get community members to decide, you know. What I'm saying is I think that the reason why the Human Services person voted was a matter of necessity sometimes. I don't know what the makeup is right now or how many people are on that. I haven't been on it in 5 years. Joel's on it.
Maybe one member shy. But
okay. So then maybe the board member, maybe we can take that away.
So are we ready to make a motion?
Well, I guess that in regard to that conversation, I'd recommend let's go ahead and clean up the code about the Rexon Park and have them just make it clear they don't vote.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's already you know.
And not Human Services or.
I mean, I hear what Jackie's saying, but it sounds to me like we should do it too.
Yep. I was just trying to figure out why it
white
happened.
Historically.
That's what makes sense.
And yeah. Then as for Greenways, I just need to think of. I need to think more about how that fits together to understand that. And so I guess we just leave it the way it is right now.
I mean, you're saying that because we don't have enough people, we have to have somebody to vote there.
Well, Jackie said historically that may have been.
With part human, of it. That had changed. I mean, we don't have
with
a
Human
problem.
Services.
Yeah.
Well, I was asked how it came about, and I was trying to. Oh, okay.
No? I think, and there's any. I mean, there's plenty
right.
of organizations out there who would love to.
Exactly. I'm not defending the board person voting on that. I'm saying that that's how that came about, and that all of these came about at different times and evolved in different ways.
I mean, it would lead us, I think we should protect the board member who sits there because it would lead us to direct criticism that, you know, they don't want to support this or they didn't fund me because I wasn't there, I wasn't
sure.
front of that.
Who would
whatever.
Have to criticize?
Money, that's what money does.
Are we ready?
Okay,
I can make a resolution if you're all ready.
All right, let's
so I move attachment A with items 1 through 3 and the addition of item 4 would be staff would create materials for chair training. Item 5 would be a common set of bylaws with procedural rules, including email, internet use, that could be used by all advisory boards. Number 6 would be a change to number 1.A on the guidelines for selecting advisory boards to specify that the chair would fill out the recommend the summary form, not the recommendation form. Number seven would be a common template for minutes. Number eight would be a term of 2 years for the chair. And number nine would be to amend the town code for Recreation and Parks and Human Services Advisory Committee to specify that the BAOA person is a liaison, a non-voting liaison.
And your term limits for the advisory board non-chair.
Well, we already have that.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Is that a second, Randy?
Yes, I will.
I think two of those are going to, well, as you pointed out, one of those is going to certainly require an amendment to the code, which would be the liaison cleanup. And, but I think also probably the two-year term for the chair, because right now it just says the advisory boards appoint their own chairs. There's no limitation, so it probably would need to be inserted in the code. Mm-hmm. So most of the things you talked about could be just modifications to your resolutions, because they're just the way you appoint things.
Uh-huh.
But those two would, so whatever, we'll have to look at that list, and whatever requires code changes, we'll have to bring back to you.
Okay.
Right. Understood.
We'll put those changes in the guidelines and bring those back to you for adoption.
Okay. Great. Okay.
Clear on this.
Motion on the table has been seconded.
Has everyone seconded?
Yep, I did.
By Randy.
Okay, I just want to make a quick comment that yes. I'll probably vote against it because I think it'll get onerous for us to go through and make all the appointments ourselves. I'd rather have the chair make the appointment and then we can always change it or not accept it. That's the reason I'll vote no.
But the
any other discussion?
Okay.
All right, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Aye. One nay. And by Lydia LaBelle. Motion carries. Is there any other business before the board? If not, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
We move.
Second.
Those
okay.
So say aye in favor.
Thank you.
Meeting's adjourned.
Get that.